And good afternoon, it's Rod McClure here with you with our Monday afternoon book reading. And we've been reading Shadow Over Innsmouth by H.P. Lovecraft. But before we go any further, a word from our sponsors.
Specialising in rural conveyancing and succession planning, Chamberlain's Law Firm are with you for all your legal needs. No matter how big or small, their lawyers can assist with a range of legal problems and advice. With offices in Braidwood, Canberra and Sydney, they have team members everywhere to assist you. Call Chamberlain's today on 6188 6200 or find them online at chamberlains.com.au to speak with their expert lawyers about your legal needs. Chamberlain's Law Firm, a sponsor of Braidwood FM 88.9.
Where should you go to see the future of farming? It's as close as White's Tractor Kubota dealer right now. The next generation of tractor has arrived, the remarkable M71 range. At the heart of Kubota's most powerful tractor ever is a 6.1-litre engine that delivers 170 horsepower of dynamic, clean efficiency like never before. At every level, the M71 has the technology that professional farming demands for success. Arrange a test drive at White's Tractor's new premises at 50 Robinson Street, Goulburn, and experience a new high-spec powerhouse from Kubota. White's Tractor's is happy to support Braidwood FM.
Goulburn Workers Club is located in the heart of Goulburn CBD. There are three public bars, including a cocktail lounge, boasting 20 different products on tap across the club, as well as full tab and kino facilities. Enjoy Monday to Friday lunch specials for $10. Monday and Tuesday nights is half-price steak or salmon. Wednesday nights is two roasts for the price of one. Thursday nights is $10 chicken schnitzel. And coffee and cake deals are available 7 days a week in the cafe for $9.80. Goulburn Workers Club are proud to be a sponsor of Braidwood FM 88.9.
The Araluen Hotel is open 5 days a week, Wednesday to Sunday, offering visitors and locals a welcoming bar with cold beer on tap, a games room and a beer garden. The bistro is open for lunch from 12 noon till 2 p.m. and for dinner from 6 p.m. till 8 p.m. Check out the website at www.araluenhotel.com.au or find them on Facebook. The Araluen Hotel proudly sponsors Braidwood FM 88.9 and can be contacted on 4846 4023.
And a big thank you to our sponsors who help our station to be all that it is. We've been reading Shadow Over Innsmouth by H.P. Lovecraft, and we've reached the point where our hero has gone to Innsmouth, and he doesn't intend to stay overnight. He's been warned it's not a wise thing to do. And he's discovered that some of the things being said about the locals, their shambling gait, their eyes that never seem to blink and bulge a little bit, scaly skin, no older people about. And of course, Devil's Reef can be seen off in the distance. We continue on where our hero has just found old Zadok. After about four hours remained for conversation, if I were to catch the 8 o'clock coach for Arkham, and I began to dole out more liquor to the ancient tippler, meanwhile eating my own frugal lunch. In my donations, I was careful not to overshoot the mark, for I did not wish Zadok's venous garrulousness to pass into a stupor. After an hour, his furtive taciturnity showed signs of disappearing, but much to my disappointment, he still sidetracked my questions about Innsmouth and its shadow-haunted past. He would babble of current topics, revealing a wide acquaintance with newspapers and a great tendency to philosophise in a sententious village fashion. Toward the end of the second hour, I feared my quart of whisky would not be enough to produce results, and was wondering whether I'd better leave old Zadok and go back for more. Just then, however, chance made the opening which my questions had been unable to make, and the wheezing ancient's rambling took a turn that caused me to lean forward and listen alertly. My back was towards the fishy-smelling sea, but he was facing it, and something or other had caused his wandering gaze to light on the low, distant line of Devil Reef, then showing plainly and almost fascinatingly above the waves. The sight seemed to displease him, for he began a series of weak curses, which ended in a confidential whisper and a knowing leer. He bent forward toward me, took hold of my coat lapel, and hissed out some hints that could not be mistaken.
"That's where it all begun. That cursed place of all wickedness, where the deep water starts. Gate of hell. Sheer drop down to bottom no sound and line can tick. Old Captain Obed done it. Him that found more and was good for him in the South Sea Islands." Everybody was in a bad way them days. Yes, trade was falling off, mills losing business, even the new ones. The best of our men folks killed to privateering in the War of 1812, or lost with the Elizy Brig and the Ranger Snow, both of them Gilman venters. Obed Marsh, he had three ships afloat, Brigantine Columbia, Brig Hetty, and Bark Sumatra Queen. He was the only one as kept on with the East India and Pacific trade through Ezra Martin's barkentine Malay Pride, made a venture as late as 28. Never was nobody like Captain Obed. Old limb of Satan. I can mind him a-telling about furrin parts and calling all the folks stupid for going to Christian meeting and bearing their burdens meek and lowly. Says they'd ought to get better gods like some of the folks in the Injies. Gods as'd bring 'em good fishing in return for their sacrifices and it'd really answer folks' prayers. Matt Elliott, his first mate, talked a lot too, only he was again folks doing any heathen things. I told about an island east of Otaheite where there was a lot of stone ruins older than anybody knew anything about. Kind of like them on Ponape in the Carolines, but with carvings of faces that looked like the big statues on Easter Island. There was a little volcanic island near there too, where there was other ruins with different carvings, ruins all wore away like they'd been under the sea once, and with pictures of awful monsters all over 'em. Well, sir, Matt, he says the natives around there had all the fish they could catch, and sported bracelets and armlets and head rigs made out of a queer kind of gold and covered with pictures of monsters just like the ones carved over the ruins on the little island, sort of fish-like frogs or frog-like fishes that was drawed in all kind of positions like they was human beings. Nobody could get about out them where they got all that stuff, and all the other natives wondered how they managed to find fish in plenty, even when the very next islands had lean pickings. Matt, he got to wondering too. So did old Cap'n Obed. Obed, he notices, besides that lots of the handsome young folks would drop about out of sight for good from year to year, and that there weren't any old folks around. Also, he thinks some of the folks looked darn queer, even for Kanakis. It took Obed to get the truth out of them heathen. I don't know how he done it. But he begun by trading for the gold-like things they wore. Asked 'em where they come from and if they could get more. And finally wormed the story out of the old chief, Wallachia, they called him. Nobody but Obed had ever believed the old yellow devil, but the captain could read folks like they was books. Nobody never believes me now when I tell 'em, and I don't suppose you will, young fella. Though come to look at ye, ye have kind of got them sharp-reading eyes like Obed had. The man's whispers grew fainter, and I found myself shuddering at the terrible and sincere portentousness of his intonation, even though I knew his tale could be nothing but drunken fantasy. Well, sir, Obed, he learnt that these things on this earth, as most folks never heard about, and wouldn't believe if they did. It seems these Kanakis were sacrificing heaps of their young men and maidens to some kind of god things that lived under the sea and getting all kinds of favour in return. They met the things on the little islet with the queer ruins, and it seems them awful pictures of frogfish monsters were supposed to be pictures of these things. Now, maybe they was the kind of critters as got all the mermaid stories and such started. They had all kinds of cities on the sea bottom, and this island was heaved up from there. Seems they was some of the things alive in the stone buildings when the island came up sudden to the surface. Well, that's how the Kanakas got wind. They was down there. Made sign talk as soon as they got over being scared and pieced up a bargain afore long. Them things liked human sacrifices. Had had 'em ages afore, but lost track of the upper world after a time. What they'd done to the victims, it ain't for me to say, and I guess Obed wa'n't none too sharp about asking, but it was all right with the heathens because they'd been having a hard time and was desperate about everything. They gave certain number of young folks to the sea things twicked every year, me, Eve, and Halloween, regular as could be. Also give some of the carved knick-knacks they made. What the things agreed to give in return was plenty of fish. They drove them in front, all over the sea, and a few gold-like things now and then. Well, as I says, the natives met the things on the little volcanic islet, going there in canoes with the sacrifices, etc., and bringing back any of the gold-like jewels as was coming to them. At first the things didn't never go on the main island, but arter a time they came to want to. Seems they hankered arter mixing with the folks and having joint ceremonies on the big days, May Eve and Halloween. You see, they was able to live both in and out of water, what they call amphibians. I guess the Kanakas told them as how folks from the other islands might want to wipe them out if they got wind of their being there. But they says they don't care much because they could wipe out the whole brood of humans if they was willing to bother. That is, any as didn't have certain signs such as was used once by the old ones, whoever they was. But not wanting to bother, they'd lay low when anybody visited the island. When it came to mating with them toad-looking fishes, the Kanakis kind of balked, but finally they learnt something as put a new face on the matter. Seems that human folks has got a kind of relation to such water beasts, that everything alive comes out of the water once and only needs a little change to go back again. Them things told the Kanakis that if they mixed bloods, they'd be children as would look human first, but later turn more and more like the things, till finally they'd take to the water and join the main lot of things down there. And this is the important part, young fella. Them as turned into fish things and went into the water wouldn't never die. Them things never died except they were killed violent. Well, sir, it seems by the time Obed knowed them islanders, they was all full of fish blood from them deep water things. Now, when they got old and begun to show it, they was kept hid until they felt like taking to the water and quitting the place. Some was more touched than others, and some never did change quite enough to take to the water, but mostly they turned about just the way them things said. Them as was born more like the things changed early. But them as was nearly human sometimes stayed on the island till they was past 70, though they'd usually go down under for trial trips afore that. But folks as had took to the water generally came back a good deal to visit, so as a man would often be a-talking to his own 5 times great-grandfather, who'd left the dry land a couple 100 years or so before. Well, everybody got out of the idea of dying except in wars, canoe wars, you know, with other islanders, or as sacrifices to the sea gods down below, or from a snake bite or plague or sharp galloping ailments or something afore they could take to the water, but simply looked forward to a kind of change that wa'n't a bit horrible after a while. They thought that they'd got as well with as they'd had to give up, and I guess Obed kind of come to think the same himself when he chewed over the old Wallachia's story a bit. Wallachia, though, was one of the few as hadn't got none of the fish blood, being of a royal line that intermarried with royal lines on other islands. Wallachia, he showed Obed a lot of rites and incantations as had to do with the sea things, and let him see some of the folks in the villages had changed a lot from human shape. Somehow or other, though he never would let him see one of the regular things from right out in the water. In the end, he gave him a funny kind of thingamajig made out of lead or something that he said would bring up the fish things from any place in the water where they might be a nest of them. The idea was to drop it down with the right kind of prayers and such. Well, a key are allowed, as the things are scattered all over the world, so anybody that looked about could find a nest and bring them up if they was wanted. Maddie, he didn't like this business at all, and wanted Obed should keep away from the island, but the captain was sharp for gain and found he could get them gold-like things so cheap it'd pay him to make speciality of them. Things went on that way for years, and Obed got enough of that gold-like stuff to make him start the refinery in Waite's old run-down Fullen Mill. He didn't just sell the pieces like they was, for folks would be all the time asking questions. All the time his crews would get a piece and dispose of it now and then, even though they was swore to keep quiet, and he let his women folks wear some of the pieces as was more human-like than most. Well, come about 38, when I was near 7 year old, Obed, he found the island people all wiped out about between voyages. Seems the other islanders had got wind of what was going on, and, well, they took matters into their own hands. Suppose they must have had arter all them old magic signs, as the sea thing says, was the only things they was afeard of. No telling what any of them Kanakas will chance to get a holt of when the sea bottom throws up some island with ruins older than the deluge. Pious cusses these was. They didn't leave nothing standing on neither the main island or the little volcanic islet, except what parts of the ruins was too big to knock down. In some places they was little stones strewed about, like charms, with something on them like what you call a swastika nowadays. Probably them was the old ones' signs. Folks all wiped out, no trace, or no gold-like things, and none of the nearby Kanakis had breathed a word about the matter. Wouldn't even admit there'd ever been any people on the island. Well, that naturally hit old Obed pretty hard, seeing as his normal trade was doing very poor. Hit the whole of Innsmouth, too, because in seafaring days, what profited the master of a ship generally profited the crew proportionate. Most of the folks around the town took the hard times kind of sheep-like and resigned, but they was in bad shape because the fishing was petering out and the mills weren't doing none too well. Then's the time Obed he begun a-cursing at the folks for being dull sheep and praying to a Christian heaven as didn't help em none. He told em he'd know the folks as prayed to gods that gives something you really need, and says if a good bunch of men would stand by him, he could maybe get a hold of sartin powers as would bring plenty of fish, quite a bit of gold. Of course, them as served on the Sumatra Queen and seed the island know what he meant, and weren't none too anxious to get close to see things they'd heard tell on, but them as didn't know what 'twas all about got kind of swayed by what Obed had to say, and begun to ask him what he could do to set him on the way to the faith as it'd bring him results. Here the old man faltered, mumbled, and lapsed into a moody and apprehensive silence, glancing nervously over his shoulder, and then turning back to stare fascinatedly at the distant black reef. When I spoke to him, he did not answer, so I knew I would have to let him finish the bottle. The insane yarn I was hearing interested me profoundly, for I fancied there was contained within it a sort of crude allegory, based upon the strangeness of Innsmouth, and elaborated by an imagination at once creative and full of scraps of exotic legend. Not for a moment did I believe that the tale had any real substantial foundation, but nonetheless the account held a hint of genuine terror, if only because it brought in references to strange jewels clearly akin to the malign tiara I had seen at Newburyport. Perhaps the ornaments had, after all, come from some strange island, and possibly the wild stories were lies of the bygone Obed himself, rather than of this antique toper. I handed Zadok the bottle, and he drained it to the last drop. It was curious how he could stand so much whiskey, for not even a trace of thickness had come into his high, wheezy voice. He licked the nose of the bottle and slipped it into his pocket, then beginning to nod and whisper softly to himself. I bent close to catch any articulate words he might utter, and thought I saw a sardonic smile behind the stained, bushy whiskers. Yes, he was really forming words, and I could grasp a fair proportion of them. Poor Matt, he always was gin it. Tried to line up the folks on his side and had long talks with the preachers. No use. They run the congregational parson out of town, and the Methodist fella quit and never did see resolved Babcock, the Baptist person, again. Wrath of Jehovah. I was a mighty little critter, but I heard what I heard and seen what I seen. Dagon and Ashtoreth, Belial and Beelzebub, gold and calf and the idols of Canaan and the Philistines, Babylonian abominations, many, many tackle. He stopped again, and from the look in his watery blue eyes, I feared he was close to a stupor after all. But when I gently shook his shoulder, he turned on me with astonishing alertness and snapped out some of the more obscure phrases.
Don't believe me, eh? Then just tell me, young fella, why Cap'n Obed and 20 other folks used to row out to Devil Reef in the dead of night and chant things so loud you could hear 'em all over town when the wind was right. Tell me that, eh? And tell me why Obed was always dropping heavy things down into the deep water, other side of the reef where the bottom shoots down like a cliff, lowering ye can sound. Tell me what he'd done with that funny-shaped lead thingamajig as Wallachia gave him. Hey, boy! And what did they all howl on May Eve and again the next Halloween? And why the new church parsons, fellas as used to be sailors, wear them queer robes and cover themselves with gold-like things Obed brung? Hey!
The watery blue eyes were almost savage and maniacal now, and the dirty white beard bristled electrically. Old Zadok probably saw me shrink back, for he'd begun to cackle evilly.
Beginning to see, eh? Maybe you'd like to have been me in them days, when I seed things at night out to sea from the capolo top of my house. Oh, I can tell ye, little pitchers have big ears, and I wa'n't missing nothing of what was gossiped about Cap'n Obed and the folks out the reef. How about the night I took my pa's ship's glass up to the capolo and seed the reef a bristling thick with shapes that dove off quick soon as the moon's riz? Obed and the folks was in a dory, but them shapes dove off the far side into the deep water and never came up. How'd you like to be a little shaver alone up in the cupola, watching shapes as wasn't human shapes, eh?
The old man was getting hysterical, and I began to shiver with a nameless alarm. He laid a gnarled claw on my shoulder, and it seemed to me that its shaking was not altogether that of mirth.
Suppose one night you seed something heavy heaved off an Obed's dory beyond the reef, and then learn next day a young fellow was missing from home, hey? Did anybody ever see hide or hair of Hiram Gilman again? Did they? And Nick Pierce? And Llewellyn Waite? And Adoniram Southwick? And Henry Garrison? Hey? Shapes talking sign language with their hands, them as had real hands. Well, sir, that was the time Obed began to get on his feet again. Folks see his three daughters a-wearing gold-like things as nobody had never seen on 'em before, and smoke started coming out of the refinery chimney. Other folks were prospering too. Fish began to swarm into the harbour fit to kill, and heaven knows what size cargoes we began to ship out to Newburyport, Arkham and Boston. 'Twas then Obed got the old branch railroad put through. Some Kingsport fishermen heard about the catch and come up in sloops, but they was all lost. Nobody never see 'em again. And just then our folks organised the Esoteric Order of Dagon and bought Masonic Hall, often cavalry commandery for it. Matt Elliott was a mason again, the sillin, but he dropped out of sight just then. Remember, I ain't seeing Obed was set on heaven things jest like they was on Kanaki Isle. I don't think he aimed at first to do no mixin' nor raise no young'uns to take to the water and turn into fishes with eternal life. He wanted them gold things and was willing to pay heavy, and I guess the others was satisfied for a while. Come in 46, the town done some lookin' and thinkin' for itself. Too many folks missin'. too much while preaching at meeting of a Sunday, too much talk about that reef. I guess I done a bit by telling Selectman Maori what I see from the capital. There was a party one night as followed Obed's crowd out to the reef, and I heard shots twixt the dories. Next day, Obed and 32 others was in jail, with everybody a-wondering just what was afoot and just what charge again him could be got to halt. God, if everybody looked ahead a couple of weeks later when nothing had been thrown into the sea for that long. Zadok was showing signs of fright and exhaustion, and I let him keep silence for a while, though glancing apprehensively at my watch. The tide had turned and was coming in now, and the sound of the waves seemed to rouse him. I was glad of that tide, for at high water the fishy smell might not be so bad. Again, I strained to catch his whispers. That awful night, I seed 'em. I was up in the capital, hordes of 'em, swarms of 'em, all over the reef and swimming up the harbour of the Minooksett. God, what happened in the streets of Innsmouth that night? They rattled our door, but Pa wouldn't open. Then he clomb out the kitchen window with his musket to find Selectman Maori and see what he could do. Mounds of the dead and the dying, shots and screams, shouting in Old Square and Town Square and New Church Green, jail thrown open, proclamation, treason, called it the plague when folks came in, found half a people missing. Nobody left them as a join with Obed and them things, or else keep quiet. I never heard of my Pa no more. The old man was panting and perspiring profusely. His grip on my shoulder tightened. Everything cleaned up in the morning, but there was traces. Obed, he kind of takes charge and says things is going to be changed. Others will worship with us at meeting time, and certain houses he's got to entertain guests. They wanted to mix like they done with the Kanakis, and he, for one, didn't feel bound to stop 'em. Far gone was Obed, just like a crazy man on the subject. He says they bring us fish and treasure and should have what they hankered after. Nothing was to be different on the outside. Only we was to keep shy of strangers if we knowed what was good for us. We all had to take the oath of Dagon, and later on there were second and third oaths that some of us took. Then as help special, it'd get special rewards, gold and such. No use balking, for there was millions of them down there. They'd rather not start rising and wiping out humankind, but if they was gave away and forced to, they could do a lot towards just that. We didn't have them old charms to cut them off like the folks in the South Sea did, and them Kanakis weren't never going to give away their secrets. Yield up enough sacrifices and savage knick-knacks and harbourage in the town when they wanted it, and they'd let well enough alone. Wouldn't bother no strangers as might bear tales about outside, that is, without they got to prying. All in the band of the faithful, Order of Dagon. And the children should never die, but go back to the Mother Hydra and Father Dagon, what we all come from, what? Aya, aya, Cthulhu, Father Gun, Fainiguri, Mrligu Naf, Cthulhu, Ryalib, Ugab Nagufka. Old Zadok was fast lapsing into stark raving, and I held my breath. Poor soul. To what pitiful depths of hallucination had his liquor plus his hatred of the decay, alienage, and disease around him brought that fertile, imaginative brain. He began to moan now, and tears were coursing down his channeled cheeks into the depths of his heart. God, what I sent! I was 15 year old, meany, meany, tickle a parson. The folks as was missing, and them as killed themselves. Them as told things in Arkham or Ipswich or such places was all called crazy, like you're calling me right now. But God, what I seen. They killed me long ago for what I know, only I'd took the first and second oaths of Dagon off an Obed. So was protected unless a jury of them proved I told things knowing and deliberate. But I wouldn't take the third oath. I'd have died rather than take that. It get worse around the Civil War time, when children born since 46 began to grow up. Some of them, that is. I was afeard, never did no prying arter that awful night, never seen one of them close to in my whole life. That is, never no full-blooded one. I went to the war, and if I'd had any guts or sense, I'd have never come back, but settled away from here. But folks wrote me things weren't so bad. That, I suppose, was because government draft men was in the town after 63. Arter the war, it was just as bad again. People began to fall off, mills and shops shut down, shipping stopped and the harbour choked up, railroad give up. But they never stopped swimming in and out of the river from that cursed reef of Satan. And more attic windows got boarded up, and more noises was heard in houses, and as wasn't supposed to have nobody in 'em. Folks outside have their stories about us. Suppose you've heard a plenty of 'em, seeing what questions you asked. Stories about things they've seed now and then, and about that queer jewellery as still comes in from somewheres and ain't quite all melted up. But nothing never gets definite. Nobody believes nothing. They call them gold-like things pirate loot, and allow the innermost folks has foreign blood or is distempered or something. Besides, them that lives here shoo off as many strangers as they can and encourage the rest not to get very curious, especially round night time. Beasts balk at the critters, hosses worse than mules. But when they got autos, well, that was all right. In 46, Captain Obed took a second wife that nobody in the town never see. Some says he didn't want to, but was made to by them as he called in. Had three children by her. Two was disappeared young, but one gal as looked like anybody else and was educated in Europe. Obed finally got her married off by a trick to an Arkham feller as didn't suspect nothing. But nobody outside have nothing to do with in most south now. Barnabas Marsh, that runs the refinery, now is Obed's grandson by his first wife, son of Onesiphorus, his eldest son. But his mother was another of them, and won't never seed outdoors. Right now, Barnabas is about changed, can't shut his eyes no more, and is all out of shape. They say he still wears clothes, but he'll take to the water soon. Well, maybe he's tried it already. They do sometimes go down for little spells, for they go for good. Ain't been seed about in public for nigh on 10 year. Don't know how his poor wife can feel. She come from Ipswich, and they nigh lynched Barnabas when he courted her 50-odd year ago. Obed, he died in 78, and all the next generation is gone now. The first wife's children dead, and the rest, well, God knows.
The sound of the incoming tide was now very insistent, and little by little it seemed to change the old man's mood from maudlin tearfulness to watchful fear. He would pause now and then to renew those nervous glances over his shoulder or out toward the reef, and despite the wild absurdity of his tale, I could not help beginning to share his vague apprehensiveness. Zadok now grew shriller, and seemed to be trying to whip up his courage with louder speech.
"Hey, you! Why don't you see something? How'd you like to be living in a town like this, with everything a-rotten and a-dying, and boarded up monsters crawling and bleating and barking and hopping around black cellars and attics every way you turn? Hey, how'd you like to hear the howling night after night from the churches and order a Dagon Hall? And know what's doing part of the howling? How'd you like to hear what comes from that awful reef every May Eve and Hallow Mass? Hey, think the old man's crazy, eh? Well, sir, let me tell you, that ain't the worst."
Zadok was really screaming now, and the mad frenzy of his voice disturbed me more than I care to own.
"Curse ye! Don't sit there a-staring at me with them eyes. I tell Obed Marsh he is in hell, and he's got to stay there. In hell, I says, he can't get me. I ain't done nothing nor told nobody nothing. Oh, you young fella. Well, even if I ain't told nobody nothing yet, I'm a-going to now. You just sit still and listen to me, boy. This is what I ain't never told nobody. I says I didn't do no prying after that night, but I found things about just the same. You want to know what the real horror is, hey? Well, it's this. It ain't what them fish devils has done, but what they're a-going to do. They're a-bringing things up out where they come from into the town. Been doing it for years, and slackening up lately. Them houses north of the river, betwixt Water and Main Street, is full of them. Them devils and what they brung. And when they get ready, I say when they get ready, ever hear tell of a Shoggoth? Hey, do you hear me? I tell ye, I know what them things be. I seen them one night when... The hideous suddenness and inhuman frightfulness of the old man's shriek almost made me faint. His eyes, looking past me towards the malodorous sea, were positively staring from his head, while his face was a mask of fear, worthy of a Greek tragedy. His bony claw dug monstrously into my shoulder, and he made no motion as I turned my head to look at whatever he had glimpsed. There was nothing that I could see, only the incoming tide, with perhaps one set of ripples more local than the long-flung line of breakers. But now Zadok was shaking me, and I turned back to watch the melting of that fear-frozen face into a chaos of twitching eyelids and mumbling gums. Presently his voice came back, albeit as a trembling whisper. Get out of here. Get out of here. They seen us. Get out for your life. Don't wait for nothing. They know now. Run for it, quick. Out of this town. Another heavy wave dashed against the loosening masonry of the bygone wharf and changed the mad ancient's whisper into another inhuman, blood-curdling scream. Before I could recover my scattered wits, he had relaxed his clutch on my shoulder and dashed wildly inland towards the street, reeling northward around the ruined warehouse wall. I glanced back at the sea, but there was nothing there. And when I reached Water Street and looked along it toward the north, there was no remaining trace of Zadok Allen. Well, that's our book reading for this week. Poor old Zadok, he's sort of not... And of course, our hero, what's the odds he's probably missed that bus? What's he going to do? Well, I guess we'll find out next week. Till then, keep well, Braidwood.